You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, February 23rd, 2011. This is episode 172, Google Earth. Welcome back, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs on the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology and its impact, potential impact on your ministry. Thanks so much for joining us. And also thank a couple of lovely ladies for joining me again. This is our classroom technology focused podcast, which we do once a month. And that means that we have Gail Potratz with us this morning. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Martin.
How are you?
I am fine and rested up today after a snow day yesterday and digging out of 14 inches of snow.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, it's still snowing out there, too. It's been snowing since Sunday at 10:30 in the morning. And we're getting like just an inch every, you know, overnight there was another inch and a half in the driveway. It just doesn't seem like it's going to ever stop.
Well, one would think this is like winter in Wisconsin or something.
Well, this is our first really big snow here. We have been bypassed on many of them. So, like I say, it was our first snow day. I was about to think we weren't going to have any.
Speaking of an area that hasn't been bypassed, that would be Sleepy Eye or Snowy Eye, Minnesota, where Sally Draper lives and works. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Yeah, I proposed yesterday that we rename the city. I don't know how that's going to go over, but I feel like I live in a snow globe. Somebody said, well, quit shaking it then. But we are without snow this morning and hoping that it lasts for a while, but we had some serious digging out to do and on a two-hour delay this morning for school, and then I think hopefully things will be back to normal.
Well, what better thing to do on a snowy day is to have a podcast. And we have a lot to talk about today because it is Classroom Technology Day, as I mentioned, and there's always a plethora, a virtual plethora of topics that we could choose from because technology is part and parcel to classrooms these days. And one of those technologies that we're going to talk about today has been around for some time, and I think some teachers are just beginning to plumb the depths, as it were, of this Google technology called Google Earth.
Yeah, I was looking forward to this show because I'm one of those who hasn't begun to scratch the surface of what you can do with Google Earth. So we started digging around. We asked for help from our listeners, and we found an amazing set of resources related to Google Earth, starting with all of their tutorial information that they have online. You can take feature tours. You can find tutorials specifically for educators, and not just what Google has produced, but a lot of Google Earth users have produced a ton of resources as well. We have a lot of cool blogs to share with people if they're interested in using Google Earth in the classroom. There's 50 ideas. There's discovering the world of Google Maps and Google Earth for the classroom. There's a Google Earth blog done by Google. So there's no shortage of resources out there to get you started.
And maybe before we jump too deep into our discussion, we should probably, for those that don't know what Google Earth is, explain it a little bit. So Sally, Gail, want to give us a quick explanation of what Google Earth actually is?
Sure.
Don't all step forward at once.
I'll jump in on that.
I can't see you raising your hands, by the way.
All right, Teacher Martin. I actually just downloaded and installed a brand new version of Google Earth. I think they're up to version 6 now. And basically, it is a desktop application, so there are a lot of internet ties built into it, but this is something you download and install locally, and it allows you to view the Earth and now also the oceans and the moon and the stars and a lot of other things as well. And you can get a wide view of things, or you can get very, very granular granular and drill down to a street level view even of much of the world that we live in. And there's a lot of things that you can do with Google Earth. You can add your own placemarks to specific locations, and you can also look at other people's placemarks and maps that they've developed and take tours and things like that around the world.
Mm-hmm. Basically, at its most basic approach to what it does, it's kind of a geographer or geography teacher's dream, right? It basically
yes.
maps the entire world in a very dynamic and rich way. And now with all the add-ons that we're talking about, it's become almost an essential tool in a lot of classrooms, in a lot of different contexts, which is really what we're going to talk about. You mentioned that it's a downloadable tool, and it's not just on the desktop. You can download it on mobile devices as well. So there's an iPhone app. I think there's an Android app, an iPad app, so you can take it wherever you want. In fact, I used it. We had the Dead Sea Scrolls come to town last year, and we had a professor from Wisconsin Lutheran College in to give us an hour and a half talk on the Dead Sea Scrolls. And while he was giving his talk, I was able to fire up Google Earth on my phone and kind of plot some of the locations that he was talking about. So it gave me a nice perspective on the geography of the land, the terrain, where we were in the world, and distances. It was really a cool add-on and added a lot to the experience.
My previous Google Earth experience was to use it for geocaching. We've talked about geocaching before on the show, where people hide things and you use your GPS to go and find these hidden treasures in the woods or wherever. Mm-hmm. And you can actually download KMZ files, which is kind of the standard for Google Earth, where people share placemarks or whatever. You can download these files with geocache locations and then look at the locations in Google Earth. And so that's always been a help to us when we're going out on a big geocaching hunt and we want to be real efficient with all the ones in a particular area or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
Lots of uses.
Absolutely. So why don't we jump in to our little list that we put together. We have top 10 lists are very prevalent on the internet these days, so we kind of decided to do our own, except we only have the top 8, and I'm sure that'll take us plenty deep into the show. Sally, it was interesting you forwarded me kind of my initial email to you about starting this show, and just with the idea, the brainstorm that we had for better or for worse, I guess, about 3 years ago. And one of our objectives on the show was the duration of the show. And remember what that was?
Yeah, I think you were shooting for 30 minutes, Martin.
30, yeah. I may have been on the high side to 45, and rarely are we under 45, and this show is headed north of that mark already. But that's all right. And we've got 8. We've got 8 uses for Google Earth in ministry, and this could apply to the classroom, could apply to the catechism class, could apply to a lot of things that we do. And Gail, we're going to let you lead off today.
All right. Thank you. When you asked what Google Earth was, the reason I was so taken aback is I had to think for a minute. Mm-hmm. What really is it? It's kind of an odd application, because mm-hmm. you do download it, and yet there are all kinds of connections to the internet within
right.
it, and it doesn't really fit into, I was trying to put it into a category in my brain, and I couldn't categorize it. It kind of, it stands by itself, I think.
Yep.
And it is truly amazing, and there are certainly a lot of uses for it. So in the past, when I started using Google Earth, my first introduction to it was to try to use it in geography class. And I would try to, and this is some years back, and I would try to pull up the places we were studying and get the kids to see the terrain, for example, Mexico, where you could see the two mountain ranges and then the valley in the middle, and try to get them to visualize what we talked about. And it was very hard to do. The program didn't always cooperate, and you couldn't always see what I thought we would be able to gain from it. So I kind of let it alone for actually a couple of years. I hadn't done much, but I always have had in my mind that sometime we were going to do a Google Lit trip for literature class. Mm-hmm. There is a whole section of Google Lit trips online. It's a whole section on people have done these and you can use them. So when you present a book in class, you can take the tour and go through it. It's one way you can teach a book, actually. So finally this year, we dove into that. And I have to say it's been an amazing experience, but not for the faint of heart. it is a challenge to do this, and you don't have to do this, but I did had the eighth grade, part of the eighth grade, create a Google Lit trip on the book Johnny Tremaine, the book about the Revolutionary War. And why I picked that was I had visited Boston last year, and I had tons of my own photographs, and I knew that they would have easy access to photographs that they could use without even worrying about any copyright or anything like that. So That's why I hooked that together for them. I wrote up the instructions, put it on the wiki. They're quite detailed instructions, including some videos that they could look at on YouTube, and I turned them loose. Of course, I was there for questions, but they really did a good job on navigating through that themselves step by step, and learned how to create the placemarks. And within each placemark, we had specific things they needed to include, relate it to the story, you know, the place to the story. Mm-hmm. And in that, they're telling details of the story, of course. They had to include a picture, and they had to include two discussion questions at the bottom. So they created about 10 placemarks and connected. There's about 10 chapters in that book. Some looked at it that way. Mm-hmm. And then they presented those to the class after we had read the book. Other people were doing other things with the book as we read it, other projects, and then we presented our projects at the end. Very effective way to teach, very engaging. When you think about the standards and the connection to the standards, definitely collaboration was used. And of course, the creativity in coming up with the project, the way they had to figure out what the placemarks would be, you know, what would they pick for the placemarks, and then connecting it with the picture and whatnot. A lot of creativity came through in that. So, good connection to the standards and the oral communication also, because they had to then present. So that's one thing you can do. Mm-hmm. I was happy with how that turned out.
Sounds like it would be excellent in the area of literature for obviously historical works, but historical fiction as well, to give them a sense of you know, where this is taking place, where this was set.
Right, and that book is historical fiction, mm-hmm. and it did work out beautifully. Mm-hmm. Even there's some on there that are quite strange. Even the book, I mean, you wouldn't think it would make a lit trip, but the book Where the Wild Things Are, Marie Sendak.
Sure.
That doesn't really take place anywhere.
In the real world, right.
Yeah, real place, but a person actually did make a lip trip out of that, just with their imagination, imagining where it could have taken place.
No kidding.
And it turned out really nice.
Interesting.
So, a lot of imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, geography is a big use, and history as well. The other trip that I have to share with you today, and Sally did a good job of including these here so people could take a look at them. The other trip that was produced this year was in history class, and the kids, I'm not the history teacher, but the history teacher had given them the assignment to, they had to research some historical place. Anyway, the Castillo San DeMarco is an ancient or a castle, one of the earliest ones in the early period in Florida. And so this boy had written up a paper, and he had gone in and used the 3D option so that this place really still exists and you can take tours there today. So he zoomed in on it, and you can actually walk across the moat. It shows you, you know, the viewpoint of walking across the moat. It's a star-shaped building, so you're in the courtyard walking around the edges, and then you go through a place and up the stairs to see the prison bars on the walls up there. And he did not narrate the tour, but this is a recorded tour, so you My first tour I spoke about was not recorded. It was just you pull it up and you physically go from placemark to placemark as you talk. But this second one, this history one, was actually recorded. So once you pull it up, you get a little slider bar on the bottom and you start it, and it goes through. It just takes you through on its own, like a little movie, like you've recorded a movie. If yesterday would not have been a snow day, we would have been able to add his narration as well, but we didn't quite get that in because we weren't here yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, that is another feature that I'd like to do too. There was nothing wrong with the oral presentation. I think that was just fine, but I kind of was interested to see how we could do the narration within the program. But certainly a lot of any historical things that you want to visit. We've pulled up Fort Snelling in Minnesota when we've read Soldier's Heart and looked at that. We've looked at Fort Pitt. So we're always connecting a lot of history in our language arts, and so we look at a lot of historical places on Google Earth.
Yeah. You mentioned the challenge that Google Earth represented in its early days. And I guess maybe a word of caution still, it is fairly resource intensive. If you're doing a lot, it's going to tax your processor. So you may certainly, if you're going to use this in the classroom or use it in any other context, you certainly will want to try it out ahead of time and just recognize that if you've got a 6 or 7 year old machine, it's not going to perform as smoothly or as well as some of the newer dual core type processors.
Sure. We're going to move on now through our 8 uses of Google Earth. And use number 2 we had listed was historical maps. It kind of tag teams well with what Gail was just saying. And one really cool resource that I found in Google Earth this time around was using the gallery resource. And if you open up Google Earth, you typically have a sidebar on the left, and there are 2 main sections there, places and layers. And these come along for the ride when you download and install Google Earth. In the layers area, one thing that's available is gallery. And when you click on the plus mark to expand that, they've built in a gallery of different imagery into the software. And one of those, as an example of historical maps, is ancient Rome in 3D. So if you expand gallery and check the box next to ancient Rome in 3D, you can head on over to Rome, which I'm doing in my Google Earth, and actually see the buildings in Rome as they existed in ancient times. And maybe this would be useful in a Latin class or something to that effect, but just one example, and there are many, many examples of how you can get these historical maps into your Google Earth view. So great use in history class.
Very good. And speaking of history, one of the, I think, real excellent uses of this would be to teach Bible history and Bible land tours. And that's use number 3.
That's right. Use number 3 is a Bible land tour. And we're going to point people specifically to a website that's called Bible Geocoding. It's at openbible.info/geo. And what they've done here is taken each individual book of the Bible and mapped all of the places mentioned in those books of the Bible. So if you're doing a Bible class on the book of Acts, for instance, you can jump right to the book of Acts and chapter by chapter look at the different locations that are mentioned in the book of Acts. And you can also download a Google Earth KML file and bring it into your Google Earth and have all these placemarks available to you in Google Earth. So just an amazing resource that they put together here. When we were doing some prep for the show, like I said, we asked our listeners how they used Google Earth, and we heard from Principal Jeff Sell, who's at Prince of Peace in Salt Lake City, Utah, and he said this Bible geocoding site is just an awesome resource for Bible classes, school, etc., where you can overlay the old maps and then put those place marks there in your presentation and be able to show people the Bible land as it was in Jesus' time or in the Old Testament time. So great resource.
And the people that put that together were kind enough to do that and allow people to use it. There's right on their site, they tell you it's Creative Commons and you can go ahead and do whatever you want. You can print these maps, you can put them in a PowerPoint, you can use them any way you want as long as you just credit their site.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Use number four, we return to the geography classroom, and Gail, you had some examples there.
Let's see, sample. The geography class, I think I didn't have any big examples that I did with the kids specifically.
No, but
in
some
geography
that we
class.
Found resources available. Seven Wonders of the World Tour, right?
Seven Wonders of the World mm-hmm. Tour is one of these that's also been pre-done for you,
right
as Sally mentioned before. So, and that gallery resource is something that people often overlook, and there's just a multitude of things in here that you can use in any class, whether history, geography, you know, they all tie together, really. And this is just another example of a pre-made tour that you can take, and you can stop at any of the Seven Wonders of the World. You can stop along the way just by pausing and then discuss and then move on through the tour. Mm-hmm. That's really, I think, the only reason that we had this one in there, just for another example of something you could use in geography class.
In that left sidebar again, up in the places area, I noticed that they have a sightseeing tour, and it takes you to a lot of cool geography mm-hmm. locations as well. The Eiffel Tower, Sydney, Australia, so you can see all the buildings there and stuff. So lots of amazing uses. Obviously, a geography teacher's dream come true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they took the places, you know, kind of the big name places and just kind mm-hmm. of did those up for people as an example and then
exactly.
just use them, right?
Exactly.
But you could do it on any city or town or area level as well for yourself. So.
Right.
Definitely.
Good way to bring that into the classroom. Mm-hmm. Numbers 5 and 6 are somewhat related. Number 5 is something that I've mentioned in the past, and it's a combination of a couple things that are kind of cool to bring together. One is you could bring in all of the locations of Wells organizations, whether they be churches or schools or whatever. Those are all available on the Wells website, and you can get a KML file. If you go to the locator search function on wells.net, that would, if you just go to the Wells homepage and up in the top, you have the ability to click on Wells Locator. And once you go there, there's a little icon in the upper right of the screen that says GPS download. And when you click on that, this was primarily made so people could download all Wells locations into like their GPS device. But there is a KML file that can be easily imported into Google Earth. And the result is that you can bring up an entire global view. I think this is actually North America only. But you mm-hmm. could see all of the semi-global view then of all the Wells churches in the United States and Canada. Which is kind of cool because you can zoom around and you can see your area and all the Wells churches in your area. You can also get Google Earth is pretty tightly integrated with Google Maps, so you can get directions, those kinds of things with a couple clicks, and just kind of a fun thing to play with.
And Martin, just to interject there, worth mentioning that when you download and bring up these KML and KMZ files in Google Earth, it gives you the option to save them to your places.
Right.
That's over in that left sidebar. And so, you know, the Wells locations could just be sitting there ready for you to turn on and off mm-hmm. as needed.
Yep.
So you don't have to do it each time.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And along with that, too, that is a good point, Sally. When you're working with this in the classroom and kids are going to a lot of different places and creating a lot of places, that sidebar tends to get pretty crowded and pretty hard to find things and follow. So I always tell the kids, when you do open up a tour and you look at a tour and you're just, it's a one-time look. It always asks you, do you want to save this? And you're, you know, it'll put it in your temporary file. Do you want to save it when you close out? And I always say, say no, because, you know, they have like 35 of these things sitting over there. So to keep that cleaned out so you can find your tours and organize them, sometimes it's a good thing to not save everything that you see.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good tip.
Then the second, or the, actually we're on number six. Use number six is kind of a cool use and actually very useful for some congregations where you can map your membership. So obviously you have a list of all your members, their names, their addresses, and that's all that, in this case, Google Maps needs to essentially plot every member in your congregation. And this could have a number of uses for visitations, for fellowship get-togethers, for small group Bible studies, for a lot of different purposes. And there's a nice tutorial on how to do this by Pastor Gunther, Rob Gunther, who's created a nice step-by-step process to get all these into Google Maps, and then ultimately you can export these to Google Earth if you choose, but Google Maps is probably good enough at this point. And then use a tool that we've, I think, mentioned in the past called Batch Geo, which allows you to just cut and paste a spreadsheet, and you can see all of these locations on a Google map where you can zoom in, you can do street view, you can upload all kinds of things to Batch Geo and have it represented when you click on a link, just like on Google Earth where you can bring up a picture, text, those kinds of things. You can do that same thing with Batch Geo. So we'll put a link to Pastor Gunther's write-up, but we had a number of people mention the use of Batch Geo in this, for this kind of thing, for mapping your membership to get an idea of where they are if you want to do anything. We actually did this process. Some of you probably know that we're exploring potentially moving the synod offices. And so what we did is we mapped the potential locations, and we mapped all of the Synod administration building employees so we could see where they were grouped and how different locations would mean different commutes for different people. And by that, we could get a little bit smarter on maybe places to avoid, where it would make a longer commute for everybody, or just where we were kind of geographically located. Just an interesting study.
That brings up a point, too, with the Batch Geo. Are you able to import spreadsheets into that?
Yes, you can cut and paste right in, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because that would then be a workaround for, we talked about the fact there is Google Earth, which is a free service, but there is also Google Earth Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And many, it's not a cheap service. It's between like $400, $500 for some of their offerings, and this is primarily aimed toward the business community,
right?
And that's one of their selling points, is that they can import, they have a spreadsheet importer in that program, along with some other things that aren't in Google Earth Pro. So actually, if you had the Batch Geo, you could use that type of technology without having the Pro model, which would be a very good thing,
right?
Because
right.
it would still be free.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that you could do that. Just a thought for educators as well. Google Earth Pro is available for educators for free, so you can get this more robust program that they sell.
Oh, good point.
And you can get it for free for educators.
Mm-hmm.
I did that one year. It was quite tricky to apply, and then you have to wait to be accepted, and they even tell you on the website, are you sure you really want to do this? There's not that much difference in this as far as an educator goes.
Oh,
and I would have to say I agree to that. The free program is just fine. When you see that Google Earth for educator, don't be fooled like I was and think that you're going to need to have the Pro if you really want to do it upright, because you really don't.
For most of what you do, the free version is just fine. Yep.
Yep.
Let's move on to use number 7. Gail, that's you again. Ocean exploration.
Right. Ocean exploration is, like I told Sally when we were talking, that's probably the thing that I have done the least, is go out and look at the oceans. So I did that really just to get ready for today for the first time. And I always wondered what it was about, so now I know. It's the same as Google Earth. If you wanted to map, put place marks on the Marianas Trench and give a geographic tour of the different depths of the water or whatever, you certainly could do that. I don't know if I would really, it might be a specialized class where you do something like that, I don't know, but it's still a valuable part of Google Earth because of the pre-made tours that they have for you. They have tours looking at shipwrecks. They have good scuba diving spots that they've placed out that you can go to and take a look around in. You can go through the Great Lakes, a tour of the Great Lakes. It's just kind of interesting. In my world of education right now, I'm not seeing a whole lot of uses. Maybe if you were a science teacher and you were teaching, about the oceans themselves, there would be a more specific use. But I think it's just the pre-made tours are worth just taking a look at and making available to kids. Like, when you're studying the regions, you certainly talk about the Great Lakes. Why not look at them as an underwater perspective and not just look at the top of them from the airplane down?
Right.
So it's kind of a neat feature.
So from the lowest point on the Earth to the skies, and that's our use number 8, Sally, astronomy.
Yep, I'm going to wrap up the list with astronomy, and I will point our listeners to the top toolbar of Google Earth, and there is a little icon on that toolbar that looks like Saturn, I guess. It has a ring around it, and when you click on the down arrow next to that icon, it has a list of places you can visit: Earth, Sky, Mars, and Moon. And so obviously defaults to Earth, but you can go up into the sky and look at the constellations. You can go specifically to Mars with imagery they have now of Mars, and also to the Moon. And I have several examples that I can include in the show notes. Google Earth from the Hubble telescope. There's a Hubble tour, Google Earth on the Moon, and then even some space games that someone came up with from a math perspective. Looking at Google Earth on the Moon and exploring, based on field trips to the Moon and sports on the Moon and how long rockets would take to get to the Moon, and lots of fun things there too. So good application of using the space views in Google Earth. So check those out.
And we will post all of these links and a ton of other educational links, because there is an unending supply, it seems like, both from Google and other resources that are going to be out there. So hopefully, this has given you a nice introduction and whetted your appetite a little bit to maybe use Google Earth in lots of different contexts within the classroom or within your ministry. So thank you, ladies, for coming up with those as well. I think those are excellent examples. We better get a move on here. Ministry resources.
I just put a quick mention there of a new product from Logos. Many of our listeners use Logos for their in-depth Bible research and study, and they have a new product called Proclaim, which is basically a worship presentation product, but the difference is that it's cloud-based. So as you're developing your worship resources, perhaps you use imagery or video or text projected in your worship service, you can work on those files in the cloud with multiple people having access to them. And so, and it works on a lot of different platforms as well. So it's a different take on worship planning and worship resources. And they haven't yet released it, but they're doing some big promo of it, have a big giveaway going on right now. And we'll include links in the show notes to Proclaim Online.
Very good. News and tech. We wanted to share with our listeners some news from Google again. This has to do with Google Docs. And they are now supporting a bunch of new formats. In fact, a dozen new popular file formats that you can not just upload, because you could always upload any file format, or not always, but recently you could upload any file format you wanted. You just couldn't view it online. So they've added viewers for a number of these different applications, including Microsoft Excel format, that's the XLS and XLSX formats, PowerPoint, PPTX formats, Apple Pages, Adobe Illustrator, Adobe Photoshop, AutoCAD files, SVG files, PostScript files like EPS, TrueType fonts, TTF files, and XML paper specs, XPS. So if you are in need of viewing any of those file formats, or if you receive them from somebody and you don't have the application to view them, like many people don't have Adobe Photoshop, very expensive, and somebody sends you a Photoshop file, now you can load it up in Google Docs and use their built-in viewer to view it. Works pretty well. I've tried it.
So it's not an editor for those files.
Correct.
But it
just
is a viewer.
Got
just
it.
Just
a viewer. Yep. So
very good.
Read only. So they've done some nice stuff there. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Gail, what's your pick this week?
My pick of the week has nothing to do with Google.
Okay.
So,
mine either.
Veering away from Google for a moment. On March 1st and March 3rd, coming up quickly, there are two special days. One is called World Maths Day, and one is World Spelling Day. And I think I talked about this once last year, but I used it as a pick because it is coming up, and you have until February 28th to go online and register your school and your classrooms for these activities. What it is across the world on the same day, actually 2 days because of the time differences, mm-hmm. A 48-hour period, kids can go online and they enter into little, they call them games, math contests with kids from all over the world. Kids will log in and you give your age. I think you can pick your ability. You can. There's a level of difficulty also that you can select. And then you on your screen pops up four or five different people, and you see their names, and you see their school names, and you see where they're from. So you can, you know, that's the first thing that gets the kids excited, is they're playing this game with somebody from some country, you know, far, far away.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, math is kind of an international language, so it doesn't really even matter if they speak the same literal language.
Uh-huh.
Now, they added spelling. This is a new one, at least new to us. We've done the World Maths Day last year, and it was a huge hit. The lab was full all day of people coming in and taking their turn, different classes, and competing. Then World Spelling Day we're going to do on the 3rd, and that one I imagine they're going to have to divide up according to languages.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see how that one's going to work. It's set up the exact same way, and when you register for one, you automatically are registered for the other, so you don't have to register twice. I went in and I registered our school, and then I registered individual classes. There's a way to do it where you just take a spreadsheet file, save it as the type they list, and import it. So very easy to do that and get your kids in there. You would just be amazed at how excited the kids get while they do this. One of the teachers said, you can practice. I had a class in here last week already that she came in for some practice, and the kids were just so excited. She said, have you ever seen kids this excited about math? So it is really a motivating thing and a challenge for the kids. You can see how the kids do after it's over. There is a feature within the program where you can go and look and see how your individual class did. You can win prizes if you... we've really never done that. You have to register and go through some other levels to do that. We haven't. We've just participated with the world at large. And but if you're ambitious enough to go ahead and really actually get in a contest, there are some rules you can follow and pitch yourself against some people from all over the world.
So I'm assuming on the spelling one, I'm on that page now, worldspellingday.com, there is a there's an audio file that is played, you know, online, and then you have to type in the spelling. Okay.
Right. They say the word, and then they also have a visual where they have the word, the sentence written out with a blank where the word would go.
Okay. Looks like there's a teachers, parents, and media category as well, ages 19 to 119.
So. On the spelling?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's different. I don't believe that's on the math. So.
Yep.
Interesting.
And they've got a little countdown there. 7 days, 20 hours, 10 minutes, and 42 seconds as of this recording to start.
Our kids are waiting for it. They're talking about it.
So cool. That sounds
good. It's always something that's kind of looked forward to.
Yeah, because it teaches them, obviously, the subject matter, but lets them know that they're in a global, they're in a global world, that their little world is a lot bigger than they think. So very cool. Sally, what's your pick this week?
My pick this week is a website called 66 Clouds, and it is subtitled Visualizing Word Frequency in the Bible. Our listeners may be familiar with websites such as Wordle.net, where you can actually paste in your own text, and it will create a word cloud or a combination of all the words included in the text with the frequency of the word, giving it more prominence in the word cloud. Well, the people at 66 Clouds have taken every book of the Bible and created 66 word clouds, one for each book of the Bible, and using all the words in that particular book of the Bible, developed these word clouds. And they actually tell you they use Wordle to do it. So, the same tools that we use, but they went through the trouble of doing it for an entire book of the Bible, which is big, obviously. Mm-hmm. So really impressive word clouds that developed, and you can go through and look at them all online. You can order posters of them, and it looks like they're kind of a startup company because they have their inventory posted there, and they are sold out of several of the posters, but I'm assuming they're going to be replenishing their stock over time. You can also get a book that has all of the 66 word clouds in it. Mm-hmm. But it is just neat, and maybe something that you would want to show even in a Bible class, or as you're studying a particular book of the Bible, you could just bring it up and show it on your screen. You can bring up any book and look at the word cloud made of that book. Their example on the homepage of the site is they have framed posters of each of the four Gospels hanging, and it's a really neat visual to see the words of those four Gospels in word cloud format.
This is really cool. I like this.
Yeah.
And fairly inexpensive as far as posters go. Basically $9. So $6 bucks for the poster, $3 for the shipping. They send it out through regular USPS and printed on premium poster paper. And you could probably, these are 11 by 17. I don't think you can get bigger ones. But yeah, and the way they have these matted, a white mat and a black frame looks very cool. I like it.
It does. I think it would be a really nice way for you to decorate maybe your catechism classroom even, to use the posters there.
Yeah. So. And you can get all, now they have 67. I wonder how they, what's the last one? They have a Bible poster. Okay. So 66 Old and New Testament posters and a Bible poster for $198, includes shipping. So not bad. Good find.
Yeah.
How did you find this, Sally?
Boy, I don't remember. Okay. Something that I read pointed me to it. So
I'm gonna bookmark
it was cool.
This. I think that'll be cool. So, all right. My pick of the week. Those of you that listened to last week's show remember that we were all about blogs last week, and Sally and I made a commitment and even a challenge that we were going to blog once a week for the rest of the year. And Sally, I don't know if you're still on the wagon, but I blogged last week, and I plan on blogging this week. Are you still with us?
I did. Okay. I'm blogging on the weekends, and I blogged about a big birthday event we had here.
Cool. So. And there are a number of ways to blog. You can use the the tool that's built into whatever blogging engine you're using, whether it be WordPress or whatever. I actually have a couple blogs, so rather than you do the cut and paste and that I cross-post on, so I want it on both my Synod blog, which is on Wells.net, but also martinspriggs.com. I have a blog where I'd like to include the same content. So I use a tool from Microsoft called Windows Live Writer, and they have a 2011 version now. It's essentially a blogging tool, very simple word processing tool, but it hooks up to most blogs. So it'll hook up to WordPress, it'll hook up to Blogger, it'll hook up to most of the popular blogging engines, and allow you to write once and post many. You can include images, you can include video, you can do formatting. Just makes it really, really easy. So I just write it once, I can tag the content, I can post-date the content, so I want it to appear on such and such a date. It's part of the Windows Live suite, Movie Maker and Live Messenger and all those things. You can download it for free. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. But just a nice little tool that allows you to write within an offline writer, and then you click the publish button, and out it goes and it automatically publishes. So you enter your credentials, your username and password for all the different sites that you want to post to, and away it goes. And then you have a history of it, and it shows you kind of a WYSIWYG view of how it's going to look in that particular site, which is kind of cool because I have a different design for the two different areas that I post on. Just a nice little tool, Windows Live Writer.
Very good. I can definitely see a use for that as more and more of these types of sites come into being, and we're trying to cross-post in a lot of different places. So good pick.
Good syndication tool. Yeah. Let's move on to community feedback.
And we had several people talking to us this week. First up, we heard from Leslie Bergman, who's at Good Shepherds in West Allis, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And she posted on our Facebook wall a link and an announcement that YouVersion's mobile is giving away the NIV 2010 or yep. 2011, the new NIV. And it's available through March 1st. For free download. So if you aren't connected to your cell network or wireless network, you can use the NIV offline with this free download. So check that out if you're interested. We also heard via Facebook from John Shoesmith, who's at Redeemer in Yakima, Washington. And John had a great question. He said, could Wells provide some imagery and linkage for some of the main pages that people may want to link to on the Wells website? And we actually do that kind of thing, Martin, for our final web mm-hmm. customers, and we never had really thought about extending it beyond that.
Right.
We had some old pages where we had provided that, but we need to update that, so we're starting a brand new page on the Wells Tech Wiki webmaster widgets page, and we'll be providing imagery and links to things like the Together newsletter
and all the RSS content together, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, the Today's devotion and those kind of things. So check out our new page on the Wells Tech Wiki, and thanks very much, John, for that great idea.
Excellent.
Via our Digo group, which is a Wells Tech group on Digo, Jason Schmidt from Gethsemane and Omaha, Nebraska, mm-hmm. shared with us a link to a kids copyright site. It's called Face kids site, and it has just all kinds of copyright information for children, for parents and teachers. There's quizzes, there's FAQs, and all kinds of things, and looks like a fun site for kids to learn about copyright. So
which is a very important concept, and if you are a teacher and you're not talking about copyright, you really need to start, I think, that early, because you are allowing your kids, I'm assuming, to pull content from online sources, and they need to be aware of any copyright restrictions on that, and their own creative works as well can go online in some kind of copyrighted fashion. So good link. I'm just looking at this site now, and very straightforward, I think, very readable. Nice find, Jason.
Yep. Next up, via Twitter, we heard from Marin McPeak, who is a technology coordinator at St. Mark's in Citrus Heights, California. And apparently they just began using InGrade, which is an online gradebook tool. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting to know that they're, you know, moving into that realm. But even more exciting for us is that Marin is wise enough to record training videos. Uh-huh. As she rolled it out to her teachers, she recorded 4 videos explaining how they create accounts and set up their classrooms and things like that. So check out Marin's training videos, which are posted out on Vimeo, and we'll have a link in the show notes. Thanks very much, Marin, for sharing that.
Very good. Yeah, great use for, and Sal, you're a big screencast person and very good for visual learners especially, but I think it's just a quick and easy way to document something.
Definitely. So lastly, we heard from teacher Chris Hintz, who's at Emmaus Lutheran in Phoenix, Arizona. And Chris was asking our opinion on what would be the best content management system or website builder, basically, for his school and congregation. And he was he's a Dreamweaver user currently. He does his website work on his local computer and then FTPs it to the web. So, you know, one of the drawbacks with that that he's realizing is that he's kind of the funnel for all the information on their website. And he'd like to have a content management system where he can have multiple users who can update their website. So he was looking at different options, particularly at Drupal and at Joomla. And Martin, he was looking for our opinion on those two CMS systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you gave an excellent response, and I guess I concurred as well that both of those programs are fairly, I would call them fairly labor intensive, and they're for people who really need kind of an industrial strength CMS, like the Wells.net website, where we have multiple contributors and we have lots of features and functionality, and we want to do a lot of upgrades and a lot of customization. Mm-hmm. But your recommendation, which would have been mine as well, was Final Web. So we're big Final Web fans, mostly from usability and the ability for a congregation or school to get up quickly and maintain it easily. And if you're not going to want to go the Final Web route, if you want to stay in the realm of free, excuse me, WordPress is probably a better choice for most institutions because I think of its ease of use. Now, it's a blogging tool, but I think they've come a long way to make it more of a content management tool and probably meets the needs of most congregations as well. I hope I summed up your response correctly.
I think you did great, Martin. I guess from my perspective, I don't want to be in the back end management of the software and backups.
You want to be on the content side. You want to pushing your stuff out there, not worrying about all the ones and zeros in the background.
That's right. And there's plenty of work to do on the content side besides all that background stuff. So.
Yep, absolutely.
Yes.
So thanks to everybody for your feedback, and we welcome that. So please send us your thoughts, your questions, your ideas to wellstech@wells.net, or go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. Leave us a voicemail, 405 for Wells. That's 405-367-9357. We would love to get your voice on our show. Let's close the show, Sally and Gail, with the music of Mike Westendorf, a friend of the show. His album Undefined and the song You Are Amazing. Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Sally, for joining. And stay warm.
Mm-hmm. We'll try.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
From the rising of the sun, your glory comes to everyone. And in the light of this new day, we see you are amazing. From the life that you have made, and the voice that sings your praise, to the eyes that see your face, we see you are amazing. You are amazing. time of grace in which we live. For the joy of simple things, we see you are amazing. For the day you made me new, when you called me back to you, and all the times you've seen me through, oh, you are amazing. You are amazing. Us life, oh, you are amazing. That you have come to take our place, to show us mercy, love, and grace. With joyful hearts, we sing your praise. Oh, you are amazing. You are amazing. What you've given me.